Welcome to the Dacus Report, hosted by Pacific Justice Institute founder and president Brad Dacus. For 25 years, PJI has counseled, represented, and defended people whose religious freedoms, parental rights, or sanctity of life have been obstructed or violated, all free of charge. We leave no one behind and level the playing field for Americans as they are subjected to the tyranny of the powerful. Now, here's Brad Dacus.
Welcome to the Dacus Report. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Brad Dacus, president of the Pacific Justice Institute.
Folks, we've got a lot to talk about today. And I'm going to talk about a number of Supreme Court decisions that have come down that are really rocking a lot of boats, generally in a positive way. It's going to be very encouraging. Now, I'd like to bring on to the program now Tracy Tribbett, who is the attorney who heads up our office, one of our offices there in Washington State. Tracy, welcome to the program. I wanted to, before we talked about some of the cases that I know that you're dealing with, I wanted to go ahead and address some of the recent Supreme Court decisions for the sake of the audience, because I know they're going to be curious to talk about those, and in particular what happened just recently with the Supreme Court ruling that the Office of the Presidency has total immunity with regards to official acts of the president. So it's not a complete blanket immunity for everything. So if the president is, you know, underhandedly doing embezzlement with China, okay, he's not going to be off the hook. That's nothing to do with the Office of the Presidency. But if he makes a decision in terms of the nation, the leading of the nation, he's going to have total immunity. And what are your thoughts about that? I know it's sort of, some people say, cutting the baby in half, so to speak, because it's not the total immunity, but it's also not just wiping away immunity. What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's a very important protection, Brad. You can't put a president in the situation where they're fearing the backlash of a lawsuit more than they are propounding the rights of the country. And if we can't do business, if our presidents can't make decisions because they fear litigation, I mean, think about the chokehold and the stranglehold that places on any president at any given time. And I think just the malicious nature of what they've done to President Trump, this really is a great pushback to give him and others who, you know, will follow after him the ability to do and conduct business as the president of United States should. So I think it was a great decision.
Yeah, I do too. I was really pleased to see that outcome. Also, the case dealing with the J6ers and all of, I guess about 300 of them, 350, had charges pending or were convicted of, you know, supposedly of obstructionist in terms of the election. And you know, what they're talking about is, you know, how prosecutors used a law which has up to 20 years behind bars. So I know it intimidated a lot of these otherwise innocent people to do plea bargainings, to spend time behind bars for fear they're going to get sacked with 20 years of their life taken away. But the Supreme Court, I think, ruled on that correctly, saying, hey, the purpose of this statute is dealing with individuals who are shredding documents, destroying evidence involved with a federal investigation. And they tried to apply it to the election in terms of the peaceful protesters. And the Supreme Court says, that's not what this statute's about. It's about individuals burning and shredding evidence, documents, in response to a federal investigation, or as they tried to apply it here, in terms of votes and elections and investigations with regards to the outcome of elections and destroying votes and materials like that. I think the Supreme Court was correct on this one too. Otherwise, as far as I'm concerned, people would have to be fearful that just by peacefully demonstrating that they could be criminally prosecuted instead of have their First Amendment free speech rights protected, prosecuted, put behind bars for 20 years. I mean, you know, what say you?
Absolutely agree. The attempt to shoehorn this law into the cases against the January 6ers was just ridiculous from the start. And the sad thing is we're seeing a lot of that, where prosecutors are determining what people groups that they want to go after and then just trying to, you know, mold these laws to make it fit. And you're right, our constitutional right to free speech, it cannot be used and turned against people maliciously by prosecutors and in some mocked up trial where you're trying and attempting to to silence people. And that's essentially what the Supreme Court said, is you cannot use this law to silence other people who are protesting and using their free speech rights. And it was a good decision.
Yeah, I'm very pleased with that. Now, the only case that I was a little hemming and hawing was the case dealing with challenging the federal government and how they reportedly encouraged private entities, platforms, to remove materials that was against the vax. You know, I had some mixed feelings about that. I think that was a clear abuse of powers dealing with that. But I guess the evidence just wasn't there to compel these, you know, to find a culpability, I guess, in that case. You know, and we also don't want, you know, private entities to have their free speech rights abridged. And then there's some recent case law on that from the Supreme Court, and I think we're going to see some more refining of that in the days ahead. But right now, I want to move on, Tracy, to talk about some exciting things that you're handling right now, because you are really busy up there in the state of Washington, and of course we're seeing a number of issues across the country, dealing not just in Washington but across the country, dealing with these pronouns and a rash of cases dealing with basically challenging the rights of individuals to have their free speech and not be compelled to use a pronoun affirming something that they see as an abominable act, an act of blasphemy against the Creator. What do you say about that? And tell me about these cases and this conflict between the radical LGBTQ movement trying to force pronouns down our throats versus the rights of people of faith not to have to compromise and speak forth something that violates their conscience and their core beliefs.
Absolutely. It gets to the heart of the basic principle of speaking truth in love and being forced and compelled to speak a message that is gender oriented, where an employee has a coworker who wants to be called by a certain name because they're transitioning. The employer cannot force an individual, and the government cannot force an individual to speak a certain message or to speak a message that is against a person's beliefs. And kind of how we're seeing this shake down, Brad, is in two ways when it comes to an employee. It's either a First Amendment issue, a constitutional right issue when it's public employment, or a Title VII reasonable accommodation issue when it comes to private employment. And that's kind of the two paths these cases are taking.
Now, how are these cases working out for Christians? I understand there was a case out of West Virginia recently.
Yeah, there's a great case that came out of there where a teacher, I believe it was a French class, and they were picking their names and their pronouns, and a student sort of switched genders. And the teacher said, no, I will not be made to speak, you know, this student's pronouns that do not align with their birth gender. The teacher was eventually terminated, and then a lawsuit ensued, and that Virginia Supreme Court found that they could not compel that teacher's speech, which, you know, what a wonderful, it's too bad it wasn't in a federal court, but in the state court of Virginia, it was found that this teacher, it was too much for the government to come in and say, your constitutional rights can be abridged in order to speak a message you don't agree with. So it was a tremendous victory there.
Yeah, that's a great victory. Now, that's back east, West Virginia. What about in your neck of the woods? What about the Ninth Circuit here in the West, the West Coast? Is there any case law dealing with this issue in the Ninth Circuit?
Yeah, these issues are pretty fresh, but there is an appellate case out of California, which is the Ninth Circuit. That's sort of the West Coast. And an employee, again, was being forced to speak a message at a public school for a public employer in California. And the court is saying, you know, there's a difference here between mocking and harassment and then just compelling a person to have to speak a pronoun. Forcing someone to say she or he or otherwise, you know, that's not something that the government can compel. And you've got this idea of, you know, neutral laws of general applicability, and that's a particular doctrine called Smith. The government does have an interest in ensuring that people aren't discriminated against, but not at the expense of free speech. And it's how these laws sort of measure up against the free speech of another individual. And in this particular appellate case, it went well for the plaintiff challenging the law on appeal.
Great. Well, So how do you think the Supreme Court is going to deal with this? And you think they're going to overturn the Smith?
I think that would be great. You know, the Smith Doctrine, it gets back to essentially drugs. And it was an individual who wanted to do peyote. And they said that they had a right under their religious convictions to do so. And from that came the Smith Doctrine, which says that a neutral law of general applicability must only survive a rational basis review. Like, it must be rationally or reasonably related to the goal. And, you know, arguably keeping drugs off the streets is a good goal for the government. And so what we've got with these pronoun laws is, are there any other means which are less restrictive that the government can use to achieve their goals with discrimination against transgender individuals and not abridging more rights than are necessary for people? And I think what the Supreme Court would probably find is that this is an opportune way to overturn Smith. And I think the Supreme Court has been sort of looking and waiting for such an opportunity. And the thing about it is that, you know, with the First Amendment and these goals, that Smith really, it's not rationally related to removing discrimination to force people to use pronouns. So it would present a great case.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'd be a fantastic case. I mean, just to think about it, if the court rules, you know, adverse to the rights of individuals not to have to speak forth something that violates their faith, this could be a very effective tool to purging Christians from their jobs, not just the public sector, but also potentially, you know, even in the private sector, if you will, in terms of Title VII and the application. If they say, no, there's no protection for people, you must bow the knee to the LGBTQ radical agenda and their pronouns and their pronoun mandates, or you're fired. A lot of Christians are going to be fired. They're going to lose their jobs. They're going to have a hard time finding a place to work. They're going to be just like the Coptic Christians of Egypt, treated like second-class citizen to the Muslims, or even worse. So as far as I'm concerned, this is not an option. We have to prevail in this. The Supreme Court has got to rule once and for all that individuals of faith cannot be treated like dirt and fired simply because they're not willing from their mouth to utter something that they don't believe in that violates their conscience and conviction. I believe they can easily have reasonable accommodation by allowing an employee to simply not use pronouns regarding someone who wants them to use a pronoun that's a blasphemous, that's different than who they really are, who their creator made them to be. I think they could also use the person's last name.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many ways around this. And a lot of these cases are involving zealot institutions, teachers, unions, et cetera, who want to cram their ideology down the throats of people of faith or force them to lose their jobs.
Did you know that PJI is the only legal defense nonprofit in America that serves state citizens by fighting state legislatures across the country to ensure unconstitutional or corrupt bills don't become unconstitutional or corrupt laws? That's right, for over 12 years, PJI's Center for Public Policy has generated success by standing firm in opposition to unconstitutional or immoral state bills, which makes it easier for our allies in the legislatures to kill these kinds of wrong-headed and even depraved pieces of legislation. Keep current on PJI's work on all the legal challenges we face on a daily basis, including our work through our Center for Public Policy, by signing up for our Legal Insider email newsletter at pji.org. Now, back to the Dacus Report.
Welcome back. Tracy, there's so much in the way of Title VII and the cases we're taking on. I don't want to spend too much more time on that, except to say that people out there, if they have issues dealing with harassment because of their faith, not accommodating their religious beliefs, it could be related to a mandatory COVID vaccine that is being forced upon them. There's so many people we've represented on that issue. Could be pronoun issues as well. Could be someone who wants to go to church on Sunday morning and their employer says, no, you have to go to work. In these situations, to what extent Do you see people having viable cases? I mean, are these long shot cases when they bring these actions? And what should people do? What's the first step they should take when they feel that they are being harassed or specifically not accommodated because of their faith, whether it's a public employer or a private employer? I want people just to deal with this subject and know what to do when it happens, because there is a statute of limitations limiting them to just, you know, a period of time. Sometimes it's 6 months, 12 months, 2 years. What's some general advice you could give people out there right now?
Yeah, Brad, I would say that there are three very important things that you need to do when faced with a work issue that infringes on your religious beliefs. One, you need to pray. Ask the Lord what he would have you do in that situation. Two, assuming that the Lord does confirm that you are not to do a specific thing, you need to tell your employer that you are asking for a reasonable accommodation. You have to let them know you've got a faith-based reason. You can't comply. You need to let them know what that reason is. Tie it back to scripture, tie it back to your beliefs, and lay out what that belief system is or prohibits you from doing. And then if they take any kind of a negative turn of events at work, if you are discriminated against, if you are terminated, or anything that is considered adverse, you need to report that to the EEOC. That is an administrative prerequisite, and there's a limited amount of time, as Brad said, within which that you can report to the EEOC and get a right to sue. We at PJI cannot bring suit until you have that letter in hand from the EEOC. And you're not alone in this. You can reach out to our offices. We've got a general email account that will help to diffuse your question to the right individual. So email us. We're more than happy to help.
Now, Tracy, I understand that we have some abortion clinic protesting issues taking place. What kinds of cases are we seeing at PJI regarding these free speech issues?
Yeah, this is a really a topic that is wrought with spiritual warfare. I guess that would be the easiest way to put it. We're seeing cases in Washington, in Oregon. Previously, I had an experience up in Spokane with the Church of Planned Parenthood. And Brad, I've never quite seen a city and a board use the law to silence people as we are seeing in these free speech and abortion cases. Essentially, the municipalities are writing new laws that say if you interfere with health services, and they call abortion health services, of a woman, then you can be arrested or you can be cited. You can have a restraining order placed against you. And the irony here, Brad, is that you can be found to be doing so even if you're just standing on the sidewalk with a sign. It's a terrible abrogation of First Amendment rights.
Wait a minute. So you're saying someone on the public sidewalk just holding a sign, they could be prosecuted like a criminal for allegedly inhibiting the coming and going of people into the abortion clinic just by standing there holding a sign, not touching anyone, just holding a sign. That is where we are at with this Department of Justice.
Yes, if you are found to be obstructing an individual's pathway, which technically if you're on the sidewalk and you're holding a sign, a person could say that they were intimidated, that they didn't want to pass you to get into the front door. I mean, there's any number of different ways this can be manipulated. It's also being manipulated to be worded to state that if you are making an unreasonable noise, that you can be cited or arrested. And now, reasonable minds can differ on a lot of things, but they certainly differ on what an unreasonable noise is, Brad, particularly when people are protesting. And we've seen this in Oregon.
Yeah. So a few individuals out there singing hymns. Mm-hmm. That might be an unreasonable noise. Someone out there preaching from the Bible, what the Bible says, like the old time street preachers and even though those are the founding of our nation, they get on a soapbox and they would preach. Yeah, that would potentially be unlawful and able to be prosecuted. I know we at PJI have taken on cases like this. We've got one I know in Michigan right now dealing with some people who were, one of them was a pastor, in fact, who was there to stand up for the preborn. And to help mothers not be tricked and deceived, as so often happens by these abortion mills. that the present administration salutes and thinks is doing a great thing. And Kamala Harris, oh yeah, these are great. Abortion clinics, yeah, love what they're doing. It's just so dark and evil. And it breaks my heart when I see Christians not, they don't get it. And they'll support public leaders who are openly supporting evil, like persecuting Christians and those lovingly trying to reach out to save human lives, in the eyes of God, human lives. So anyway, I appreciate you reporting on this. I know we at PGI are going to have more and more cases, particularly with this administration and this Department of Justice. We're going to see more and more Christians targeted, elderly lady prosecuted, facing up to, I think, 20 years behind bars. I mean, it's unbelievable what's taking place. And I'm just so glad we're so committed to defending the pro-life movement and those putting their necks out there to stand up for the preborn and save human lives. I understand that there's a park, as far as park protests countering the LGBTQ pride movement and a particular event in particular. What happened?
Yeah, a very interesting case. This happened, June is LGBTQ month, and so there's continual events, especially at parks and public places. And so in my own neighborhood, there was a pride event, and one of our brothers in Christ showed up to preach the gospel at this event. And because they had a permit, the organizers of this event, they attempted to trespass our client, our brother. And the police showed up. They told him he had to leave. He said, no, I've got a right to be here. It's a public space. It's a park. I can speak my message. I'm not doing so in a manner that is, harassing or overt to annoy. And the police trespassed him. He was issued a citation, taken into the municipal jail, released. And essentially, Brad, what this gets down to is that there's a decision out of Portland. It's called Gathright v. City of Portland, that held that you cannot trespass people because you're a permit holder just because you don't like their message. And this ended up being quite a dispute. We had to go through a lot of stages and phases of this case before it was completely dismissed against him and expunged off of his record. But, it just continues to show that even amongst conservative areas, this LGBTQ, if you push back against it at all, you are going to get the wrath of the devil. But we are here to stand alongside those individuals who challenge the evil.
Yeah, and we do that. And I want people out there to know that if they know of someone who has been harassed, arrested, maybe facing criminal prosecution for standing up against evil in public places, preaching the word in love, of course, but these individuals, I want them to know they don't have to go it alone. We have offices all across the country. I know, Tracy, to defend them, to represent them without charge. So folks, if you know of someone needing assistance, please have them contact us at go to pji.org, pji.org. I think we're leading the nation in this area as far as defending people who are preaching in the public places. Some people say, well, it's just not very civilized or modern. What are you talking about? I mean, this is what the Apostle Paul did. This is what the disciples did and the early church did. Finding places in the public and publicly preaching the gospel message. And what happened? The church grew and expanded. So whenever we get so cocky and proud because of the modern era we're living in, that we don't see the value in doing what the early church did, which was sharing the gospel in whatever manner it may be, including in public places, I think we're really shooting ourselves in the foot and depriving ourselves and others from being utilized the way God may want them to be utilized for the purposes of the kingdom. So this is very important. We got to watch these cases moving forward, but it is true. The LGBTQ movement wants to silence Christians everywhere, in the workplace, in public places. And we can't put up with it. We can't stand for that, because to do so would allow darkness to prevail over the light and would allow individuals who are lost not to be able to come to the light and to come to Christ. Thank you so much, Tracy, for being on the show. Keep up the great work you're doing there in Washington State.
Thank you, Brad. It's an honor. And you too. God bless you.
Take care. You too.
We would love the opportunity to continue to serve you. Just visit pji.org and click the Legal Insider button to sign up for our email newsletter. At PJI, we help individual employees, employers, business owners, pastors, students, citizens of every stripe through our practical resources, counsel, representation, and defense, all free of charge at pji.org. PJI is an island of stability and assurance in our ever-churning sea of legal and societal chaos. We are here for you.
So folks, just remember, it's our God-given freedoms we're talking about. Now, let's choose to keep them. I'm Brad Dacus, president of the Pacific Justice Institute. Let's continue the fight for your freedoms.